All right, quick headlines.
Bob Cole, 50 years.
Yes.
Standing ovation.
Kale McCarr, Hobie Baker winner. UMass, first appearance in the NCAA National Championship.
A pretty spicy game in the semis with DU, hey?
Like, yeah.
That had a little sauce to it.
Yep. UMD back there for the second year in a row. BCHL finals were underway last night. Prince George and...
Vernon. PG getting better all the time.
Prince George has lost one game all playoffs.
It'd be hard to handle.
One game. So anyway,
Spokane and PA in the dub finals, or will be by the time everybody hears this.
Yep.
So that one's fixed. The O is still up in the air. So is the Q.
Well, the WHL is not to the final yet.
No, but it's
you got Spokane.
Spokane's up 3-1.
They're up 3-1 on Everett. Yeah. They'll play Vancouver in the semis, and then Prince Albert and Saskatoon were tied 2-2 before I checked the score last night, and they move on to play, whoever wins that moves on to play Edmonton in their semis.
So still taking PA.
Probably.
They've been so
probably
dominant all year.
Well, we're going to transition here, so with that we begin.
And I brought a pen today. You never have pens in here in the studio.
I got one right next to me.
You or Louie take the pens all the time. Yeah. And you know what? When we're done, keep the pen. It's a gift. Keep the pen.
Well, I got one with me today, so we're good.
Good.
We're good. All right, well, welcome back to War Room, the Hockey Podcast, episode 7 this week. This week we are discussing NHL playoffs.
And raise your hand if you had Columbus going home 2-0.
We are two games in for some. We've got the finish of a couple game twos tonight. But we're gonna give her a go with some NHL playoff hockey, something we haven't really touched on much so far with this podcast. But should be an interesting conversation. We got Brad with me today.
How do?
And we got the special guest Owen Rauer here today.
Howdy, folks.
So, but yeah, it'll be good. We're gonna discuss some playoff hockey today. So sit in and enjoy. NHL playoff hockey this week. Brad and Owen with me today. How we doing today, boys?
Well, we're doing okay, except it's very likely I'm going to go 0-8, get skunked in the first round. I think I'm completely upside down right now.
I'd love to do some catching up here. Unfortunately, was out of commission for last night's game, so I want to get going here.
Well, Columbus to start. I mean, let's start with that one just because that's the probably, I can think we can all agree, that's the biggest surprise so far. Columbus, first game, one game fine. Two games, and not just two games, but pretty dominant in the Absolutely. Second game. Up 2-0, going back to Columbus. Now, the only thing I will say if I'm Tampa that has me at least not sweating, is Columbus was up 2-0 last year on Washington. Washington ended up winning four straight? And then the Stanley Cup. So I'm not going to say Tampa Bay is done, but
they won the first two games last year against Washington in overtime. So they're not beating Tampa by a crossbar or a bad bounce. They're killing these guys. It's not as close as what they outscored 9-1 in two games. It's not even that close.
Yep.
And Vazzy is not good right now.
No, he's not. That was a.
But it's a full-on meltdown there. Their defense doesn't look good. The goaltending is suspect.
But the forwards are getting beat to everything. It's what I said, though, before it started.
Yeah.
Right? You face no adversity coming in, and now look.
Yep. Bad time to go cold.
It is a bad time. And now it looks like maybe, potentially, Kucherov is suspended. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Probably should.
Yeah, kind of a Nazem Kadri incident there.
Yeah.
Not nearly as malicious as Kadri's hit was. Be interesting to see what the league comes down in terms of suspension wise for a guy like that.
I think you'll get a game.
That's pure frustration though on that play.
Oh, for sure.
Frustration. We're the top team coming in, and now we're down. At the time, it was 4-1, 5-1 when the hit happened,
yeah.
And we're getting out. We're getting completely owned in all three zones, and frustration boils over.
Absolutely right.
So. But
no, so it's a team effort though. When you get beat that badly, it's not anybody or any segment. It's a full team effort.
100%.
And hey, salute to Torts and the Jackets. They're looking good.
They are.
They deserve to be right where they are, as does St. Louis.
That game was a little back and forth last night.
Yeah.
Winnipeg had their moments, but St. Louis just...
Well, the one thing you can say in a 7-game series, almost without fail, the best team wins.
It does.
They just simply do.
They do. I don't really buy the goaltending topic just on the basis of it's a team game. Goaltending's huge, but I mean, it's a team game. Goaltender, defense, everything. So, you know.
We have a goaltender in studio today. Tell us about Bucky. He's not looking like himself.
No, Bucky's looking weak. He only had, what, I think he had two shutouts all regular season, and they both came within a handful of games of each other, and one of them was against the Ducks. So we're not going to... We're really not going to give him too much praise for that one, but he needs to step it up. Last year, he was a rock for them in the net, you know, especially in the Nashville series, outdoing Pecorine. He needs to be better than Binnington, and for a guy like Binnington with no experience to come in and outshine a Vezina Trophy finalist from last year, it's pretty impressive. So if the Jets have any hope of really getting anywhere in this series, winning the series, much less winning a handful of games, Bucky's going to have to step up, because they had a little bit of offensive trouble in game one, but they found a little bit more of a stride in game two. You know, Line A's playing well, something they haven't seen towards the end of the season. They need to get a solid performance from Bucky in net. He needs to steal one, especially going on the road, and it's got to be game three. So I think right now, usually you can't put the onus on the goaltender all the time, but right now I think you can in Winnipeg. He's got to step up.
Well, you can put it on some undisciplined play as well. They were very undisciplined, at least for the first half of the game last night. Now, they did weather the storm, tying the game at one after a 5-on-3 and a couple bad penalties, but yeah. They very, very undisciplined.
And, for sure.
You know, they can sit there on the ice and be shocked at the call they want, but it was a penalty, and you play that undisciplined against a team that was in last place in January and is now the hottest team in the NHL coming in the playoffs, you're going to get, it's not going to go well.
And good for them, they're consistent. Like, good on them for being, they've played the first two games, St. Louis, I mean, exactly the way they've been playing for the last 2 or 3 months. And that's, you know, hats off to Berube, the leadership on that team stepped right in, and now they've got the goaltending in Binnington. It's like we talked about 2 or 3 episodes ago, nobody wants to play them.
No.
Nope. And they're actually stepping up to potential. So that's great.
Yep. Any other series that are surprising you so far? We're only a game or two in, but there's got to be some series at least coming into tonight that. I mean the big maybe surprise is Columbus, but right. I'm not so surprised by the Islanders though.
No, I mean when you look at all the regular season body of work, then they can beat anybody.
Yeah, they 99 points. Pittsburgh and Islanders had quite a few battles this season, so I don't think that series is close to being over for sure. I think we've got an extended series coming up there.
You would think so.
I would think so.
What a surprised at the way the Leafs handled Boston. I was not looking for that in game one,
especially in Boston, one of the best home teams in the league.
Absolutely.
The question will be tonight though. How does Boston respond? That's the question. Do they try and match the game that Toronto played? And Toronto was fast. They used their skill, and they scored.
Yeah.
But does Boston try and match that game, or does Boston fall back on what makes Boston Boston, and that is their physical play?
Yeah.
And so well,
they want to play physically, but in game one they didn't catch him, so there wasn't a lot of clean opportunities to get to pin somebody. But the Leafs just moved their feet, which is something they haven't done in a month or two.
No,
so. One of my surprises in the playoffs early going is the format. I'm surprised we're still dealing with this wild card deal and you know, teams like there's going to be four or five good teams out, four good teams in the first round for sure, because they're playing each other instead of going 1-8 in both conferences. I know they did it for rivalries and they did for travel, but it's dumb. Go back to 1-8.
There's talk in regards to the format too. I think they did sign a contract though, the Players Association, And everything, signed a contract to at least extend the format and everything for another year or two.
Yeah.
If I read correctly. So that this is at least going to be around until Seattle's in the league at least.
Well, at the end of the day, you just have to win. It doesn't matter who you play.
Oh, well, that's true. I mean, you can bitch all you want, but at the end of the day, you know, no matter who you're playing in the first round, no matter what the fans say about good teams being eliminated first, playoff hockey is playoff hockey. And if you're going to, and once you're in the playoffs, best team wins.
Right.
You're tired of getting knocked out, format or not, then go out and win. So, I mean,
get some better guys.
Get some better guys.
Get some better guys. For me, the surprise and the question I have, and I don't know how accurately we can answer this, just given the fact that it's something we can't predict. But a big surprise for me was how on his head Mike Smith was in the Calgary Colorado game.
Well, he's a time bomb. We talked about this too a couple of weeks ago.
I was not expecting that.
He's either going to be good and he can play out of his mind. He's done that in the past. He had some good seasons on a real average team in Phoenix, but he's capable of that. Was he going to step up, or are we going to see Riddick? And he absolutely answered the bell. Can he sustain that?
He's best when he's busy. Yeah. I mean, track record shows when he was in Arizona getting 40 shots a night, you know, his stats were far better facing a high number of shots than they were cut in half, you know, in the mid-20s. He gets better with time and with you know, busy work. So I think if the Avs can figure out a way to hound him and pepper him, but not keep him busy the whole game, just keep him in it, you know, keeps his mind, you know, from a goaltender standpoint, you know, when you're making a lot of saves and pucks just seems to hit you, you want to keep it coming. You know, you want to keep facing shots. You want to keep pucks going off your shoulders and all that kind of stuff. You want to keep it coming.
How do you like his emotion? Like, his emotion looks to me, and I've never played the position, don't know much about it. In all my life, I've never been able to understand it all that well. No offense. But his emotion sometimes plays in his favor, like it is right now. When his emotion is not working, he's hard to hit.
Yeah, you have to stay even keeled. That's the name of the game. Like, you know, when it comes down to something like pressure, and pressure to perform, you know, that's takes a toll on your mental game, and you have to be able to stay even keeled because, you know, things go in, things start to go bad. You know, you start to reel when you get in your own head and you start to get upset, and then the other team can feed off that energy and see that you're visibly being defeated right now, and they're just going to keep coming at you. So, yeah. I think emotion is a really good thing to have. You have to, you know, kind of have to wear your heart on your sleeve. You know, your teammates have to know that you're there and you're battling for them and everything. But you got to be careful with what the other team can feed off of. And I think sometimes they can kind of sense when Smith is going down a bad path, and they can pounce on him. And I think that's what a lot of teams did during the regular season, is, you know, take advantage of his mental game.
I am absolutely loving this Vegas San Jose series. That is good. That is a heavyweight tilt.
Yeah. That first period was pretty wild last night.
Golly. Well, given the how San Jose's goaltending was this season, I don't know. They're going to have to do something here. I mean, Dell and Jones both sub 900 for the season for a second place team, and a team that a lot of people would predict to go deep. They're not going to go deep if Jones can't figure it out. He's a world class goalie. He's a great goaltender, but he's got to figure it out. And Vegas is way too lethal to have him subpar. I mean, Joe Pa and those guys in Meyer and Hurdle are all studs, but they can put the puck in the net, but they can't. You know, they can't win every game 6-5.
Well, the one goaltender analytic that I always follow is wins. So that's about all I know.
And yeah,
outscore some of their goaltending trouble.
You know, when you can have sub 900 save percentage if your team's scoring 4.5 goals a night, you know, because you're not going to be facing 45 shots. So,
how about on the other side? What if something was to happen to Fleury?
Oh, the Knights are done. I mean, Subban's capable backup here and there to give some rest and to beat some teams on some back to backs, but he's certainly not capable to carry a team right now.
Yeah, if something falls apart with Flower, they're in trouble. Yeah,
especially given how he was last year. He had like a 970 through the first two rounds of the first two rounds of the playoffs. I mean, it was insane.
Out of his mind.
He allowed 3 goals in 4 games in LA, and then shut down the Sharks. So if he can get back to that, I don't see any reason why Vegas isn't going to go far.
Tough place to play too.
In Vegas. Oh, well, it's a production in Vegas.
Oh my gosh.
It's not just a show up to a hockey game, you know, listen to the PA announcer talk about safety with pucks coming over the glass and your typical pregame stuff and, oh, all right, here come the Knights. It's a full on typical Viva Las Vegas production there. And they do it every game. They don't just do it playoffs. Night. They don't just do it. I mean, it's every single
every
game.
Night.
But I mean, they
Vegas that place up so well.
Well, and it works though.
It sure does.
Any other place or anything like that, it might be cheap.
It'd be off putting.
It might be cheap, but for Vegas,
it's what you expect.
It works.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't want to talk personal brackets. We're two games in to the point where now we start talking about the picks we made, and it might sound like. Like, because nobody's watching us, it might sound like we're changing them just to sound right. So we're not going to talk about brackets. But one thing I will say is going in, my sleeper team, if there's a team that can fly under the radar to the Cup final, it's Dallas.
I'm just going to ask about Dallas.
They're my sleeper team.
And
I'm not going to go so far as to say they will make the Cup final because you still got to go through a Vegas or a San Jose. You got to go through then St. Louis or Winnipeg or Calgary or even Colorado, depending on who gets there. But if there is a team that if they were to make the finals and it would surprise you, I wouldn't be. They're my sleeper pick, at least. They Bishop and Hudobin, they finally got their goal, the goaltending that they've been clamoring for and people have said they haven't had for years. And if Bishop can stay healthy, that's
Bishop's
the big question.
He's got to stay out of the ambulance.
Yeah. If Bishop can stay healthy, my pick, I'm not going to say they're going to walk through teams, but my pick is Dallas.
Well, he did have the best peripheral stats for goaltenders in the league this year, but that's the thing. Like Khudobin was moderately efficient this season. I think he was still under 500 for record, but his stats weren't overly great. And they've certainly improved from when he was in Boston or Anaheim and was getting paid to let the puck by him. But if Bishop can stay healthy, which he's been able to do before on that Cup run in Tampa, he didn't get hurt until the final round. He's got to stay healthy, and guys like Sagan and Bennett have got to lead that team. They don't have much else. Klingberg, Sagan, Ben, those guys are the key pieces, and Bishop's got to stay healthy.
Bishop is the Land Rover of goaltenders. When he's not in the shop, he's really fun to drive, but he's got loose lug nuts constantly, especially this time of year. But you know what, the impressive thing, not just the goals, I started watching him a little bit because he scored, but this Heiskanen kid in Dallas, I've seen him play quite a lot this year. Wow, can he skate.
He's a skater.
He doesn't get a lot of attention being in Dallas, but no. That is a real pretty skater.
He's a skater.
He is good with the puck.
He is.
He is just, he's big enough and mobile enough around the net to play with anybody, and they're using him. He's playing a lot of meaningful minutes for a first year guy.
And so is Rupie Hintz, however you say that. Rupie Hintz. I don't know. He's a stud. He's a big body. He's got hands. He's fast.
Really,
you know, he's got really good skill.
Yeah.
Now he was good in the Calder Cup playoffs a couple years ago when they were. I think it was last year that they lost to Toronto.
Yes.
Yeah. So and Hintz was an integral part of the. AHL club down there last year when they lost to the Marlies in the Calder Cup finals. He was huge.
Yeah. And you know what? He's got a good body of work this year. And like Evan said, if they don't get some scoring depth beyond Sagan and Ben, and Radulov is still playing with a whole lot of pep.
Radulov actually might have led their team in points this year. I'm not sure. I know he missed a handful of games, but maybe at least points per game. He was the most consistent guy offensively.
He's just not lost the fire. He really got. He's got a lot of energy, and that's.
I wasn't so sure about him after his Montreal days and things, but
no, he had a decent go in Montreal. It was Nashville that he didn't care.
Well, that's what I mean. After his Montreal days, I wasn't so sure about him. You know, he gets to Nashville and then.
No, Nashville. He was in Nashville first. He was drafted by Nashville.
Oh right.
Way so back, and then Nashville he left days. The league. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So my mistake. I got it backwards. So I was. I wasn't so sure about him before his Montreal days, is what I mean.
Maybe he got a call from Dale Hunter because he played in London in junior, right? Yeah. Maybe Dale Hunter said, look, you're making me look bad, pal. Pick it up a little. No. You know, we're going to take you off the wall in London.
No. Speaking of London, Robert Thomas is playing pretty well for the Blues.
Oh, yeah. He's a solid guy. He reminds me of...
he was Hamilton, wasn't he?
Hamilton and London. Yeah. So it was both in the OHL.
He reminds me a little bit of Bo Horvat. Not as much skill, but same kind of game. Same kind of a real responsible guy.
Well, before we take a quick break, do we have any thoughts on tonight's game too? So you got Washington and Carolina. You have Colorado and Calgary. And Dallas and Nashville. Your three game twos tonight.
Toronto-Boston,
yep. So four game twos tonight. Any thoughts on game twos? You got a couple game twos there where if you don't walk out with a 1-1 series, it's a pretty tough hill to climb.
Yep.
When I think of that, I think of Carolina with Washington. Colorado. I think of Colorado with Calgary, and
even Boston going to Toronto.
I mean, I guess you could say that about all four of the games tonight. If you don't walk out a 1-1 series, not impossible, especially after Washington last year with Columbus and things like that. But you go down 2-0, and it's as close to an impossible climb as you can get without it being impossible.
Well, yeah, unless you're Washington last year or the Kings a few years ago, it's very, very hard to do, especially if you lose at home. And on the subject of personal brackets, the only game series that I'm not losing right now is the Vegas San Jose because it's tied. Otherwise, I'm 0-7-1 as of right now.
All right. Well, War Room, the hockey podcast. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
War Room, the hockey podcast from North Paw Media Studios in Summerland, BC, brought to you by your friends at Breakaway Brewing.
Thank you for your patience. War Room, the hockey podcast, is back. Quick shout out real quick. Love to give shout outs to our listeners. Without the listeners, this podcast wouldn't really go very far. Instagram page, Top Shelf Hockey, reached out to me the other day. They're listeners. Per their bio on Instagram, they are a bunch of beauties who love the game. So they film hockey content. They also make custom apparel. They offered to do that for War Room, the hockey podcast. So shout out to you guys. Appreciate the support. We really do appreciate it. It goes a long way.
War Room swag. Do they make that? We need to go back to them and ask them if they make triple XL so we can get something for Louis.
For Louis, yes. No, I told them we'd be in touch, so we'll see if they're listening. Maybe they can answer that question for us here so we can get a triple XL shirt for our producer here.
If my mic goes dead, it's because Louis browned off and shut me off altogether.
Yes, so Top Shelf Hockey, appreciate it. Appreciate the support. We should be in touch here shortly, so thank you, boys. So anyways, playoff hockey.
Every year I look at the guys in the finals, I look at the teams that succeed and go deep with it, and especially the ones who win the cup. And going back as far as I can remember, the bottom six play is always a difference maker every single year.
And the Rob Niedermeyers, Travis Moen, Sammy Paulsons, you know.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's why those guys are in such demand. I mean, that's how Claude Lemieux had a job for as long as he did, because he was a playoff animal. And, you know, he would score more goals in the playoffs than he did in the regular season. And he played 9 minutes. And he was just an absolute you-know-what disturber.
I mean, you can't avoid that there are bottom six, line three, line four. You can't avoid that. But before we get into, you know, the bottom six that we like, question is, not that it's going by the wayside, but is there really a bottom six anymore? You hear coaches now more and more almost getting offended when the media or anybody talks about line numbers and all this stuff. Wow. You heard in Calgary the mention of well, you're line four, and the coach's response was, what line are you talking about?
Right.
So, I mean, obviously, okay, what I'm getting at is obviously there is a line three and a line four. Obviously, there is depth. There are roles in the bottom six that differ from the top six that will never change. As when you look at the personnel that are on the third and fourth line compared to the top six, it's just different. There's no avoiding that, no matter how coaches or anybody wants to respond to it. But you are seeing, and it's with the growth and the evolution of the game, you are seeing third and fourth lines producing more at a rate that they didn't used to even as recently as 8 or so years ago. You used to see the bottom six being 6'5", 200 some pound big bruisers, and now, I mean, Calgary, for example, you got three guys that are 5'10"
If Phil Kessel is on your third line as he was when they won the cup with Bonino and
Hagelin,
how can you call that a third line? And if you talk to any coach, you get inside any room, they will tell you that if we don't beef up our third and fourth lines, if that's what you want to call them, that's how else you're going to refer to these guys. If you can't win a cup, if you can't compete without that kind of performance from those guys, then they're not third and fourth lines. Then they're just one of the 12 forwards. But everybody needs them. Everybody wants them. And now you're seeing they only differ in the minutes played and maybe on the stat sheet. But in the value to the team, absolutely the same as anybody.
Well, it's all about the scenario. It's the matchups. You know, your third line, you know, might not match up well with whoever you're playing that night, but, you know, the next night they may. So your third line may play 12 and a half minutes one night, but they've got a better matchup the next night, so they're going to be out there for 16, 17 minutes. You know, yeah. It's, you know, defensive zone faceoffs, who do you want taking the draw? You know, situations like penalty kill, that kind of thing, you know, late in the game. It's all about different scenarios, so I don't think there's really a label of one through four. I mean, there is, and obviously the guys on the top six will produce more. They're going to play a lot more. But the guys that come in on the bottom six, just they're the character guys. They're the role players, and they're just as important as putting the puck in the net. You know, guys like that to eat minutes or match up with another team's top line or something like that. They're huge.
Yep. The story in this playoffs, going off of that, the story in this playoffs is special teams. So far, How many goals scored in the playoffs so far when you look at the series? And we don't really have to touch on it right now. It may take us pulling up examples, but, you know, rhetorical question, how many of the goals have been power play goals? How many bad penalties have been taken? How many, you know, things like that? So special teams has been, if not the determining factor in most series, it has been at least a contributor. So it's becoming more and more prevalent, so teams need to be a little more disciplined. But bottom six, what bottom sixes do we like? You know, if we had to pick one team with a bottom six that we like, which one would it be?
I want to jump in before I say anything about that. I do want to jump in about the discipline. I think a lot of the penalties that are called now isn't a lack of discipline. It's the league trying to regulate everything. Trying to up the offense by, anytime someone's hands get touched by a stick, it's a slashing call, or kicking guys out of the faceoff twice in a row and getting a penalty for it. Like, I think that the disciplinary factor is garbage. I think the league needs to let the players play, and they need to stop policing everything and adding so many rules. And that's, you wonder why you're always having GM meetings trying to change things and see what's working and what isn't working. It's because you're always changing things. Just let it go. Let it be. The game's been a great game for over 100 years. Why start making rule changes now? Like, you know, these slashing calls that are going to have effects on games, you know, in the end, you know, late in the third period, you're going to get a slashing call that wouldn't have been called 5 years ago. And it's going to completely derail a team, you know, whether it's a late goal or momentum or whatever it is, it's going to ruin it. So I think the disciplinary factor is kind of solely on the league at this point, you know, with the spike in penalties. I think it's on them. You know, the onus is on them for sure.
The players adjust, whether it's in the face-off circle or wherever it is, and this slashing penalty, this little tap slash, one guy, poor Mark Mathot, loses a chunk of finger, and now every time somebody comes near you with a stick, All you have to do is shake your glove, and you know you're going to go into the power play.
Well,
and the guys know that. They play it.
The haters out there want to vilify Sidney Crosby. Can't tell you how many times I see everywhere, you know, hate on Sidney Crosby for doing that and not getting suspended and not getting penalized. But this or that happens, and oh my gosh, get over yourself, first of all. But it's true. So now you get embellishment, you get things like that. You know, I'm like last night, I'm not going to say that Shifley flopped, but O'Reilly played the puck. He didn't trip Shifley when O'Reilly took his tripping penalty last night. So what's happening now is a guy goes down or a guy reacts and all of a sudden it's a penalty rather than looking at the play and going, okay, wait a minute. You know, Marner gets tripped on the breakaway. That is a penalty shot. That happened.
Right.
Marner didn't trip over himself.
No.
That happened. Okay, fine.
What about Jack Johnson coming out of the box? What do you think that hit on Adam Pellick there, where he kind of ran into, I can't remember who he ran into first and tripped him up, and he kind of spun around. He was on his way to the bench, and he and Pellick just ran into each other. It looked like a nasty hit, but when you look at it, he wasn't even really looking. He didn't even see Pellick coming. He was on his way to the bench.
You can't skate anymore. It's one of those things where it seems like you can't move anymore. You got to stay directly north south in your lane, because the second you crisscross, you run the risk of contact, and well, that's interference because you got in his way. No, I'm skating through my path here. Not my fault he skates backwards into me, but that's what it's coming down to. So I will agree. There's incidents where discipline has to be a factor,
right?
Because whether it's the league regulating or not, these players, you know, they come in at least with some semblance of an idea anyway of how a game is going to be called. You have to adapt. Shifley and Kopp last night cross-checking O'Reilly, that's poor discipline, because those were two cross-checks, blatant cross-checks. Puck was nowhere near. Those were bad discipline. Jack Johnson, anything like that, fine. But there, so to say that discipline is not a factor at all, I don't see that as being right. But to say that it's strictly discipline, that's not right either. I think there's a give and take and a balance, definitely.
Do you think the league should step in and do something with Trevor Moore picking on poor Chara?
No, I think that's something the league needs to see more of.
what an amazing hit.
Look, you're 6'8", 6'9", 6'10" on skates, whatever he is, gets dumped by 5'8" Trevor Moore. Look, at that point, you deserve what you get at that point. If you're going to be 6'10" and dumped by Trevor freaking Moore, so
don't you think that puts a little life in your bench too? And they go, goodness,
absolutely,
that's awesome.
But anyway, bottom six, is it? If we had to pick a bottom six in the playoffs right now, just one bottom six that we loved, that was our favorite, what would it be?
Well, right now they don't look too good, but I think the Andrew Kopp, Matthew Perreault, Brandon Tanev, Adam Lowry, bottom six, Jack Roslovic. I mean, those guys are not only an incredible combination of size and speed and skill, guys like Jack Roslovic, who doesn't get much time, is definitely buried in the bottom six this year, but has flashes of pure brilliance and skill. And Perreault, he's put the puck in the net on every team he's been on, albeit, what is it, like four or five of them now. But Lowry's huge. He can win faceoffs. He bangs bodies. Brandon Tanev's got incredible speed, and he's just gritty. He's just he's an Andrew Cogliano 2.0, basically. And I think guys like Kopp, who can shoot the puck really well, I think a lot of those guys work well together, and they have a great give and take when it comes to the role of a bottom six. You know, guys that you want to got to eat minutes, got to win faceoffs, got to kill penalties, got to bang bodies, got to forecheck, and I think they do that well enough to eventually put the puck in the net. And I think the numbers speak for themselves. They got to figure it out though. Here, I know it's not that's not on them right now, but I think they're one of the more I'd say just complete bottom sixes in the playoffs so far, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a surprise that Winnipeg is down 0-2 right now as of this recording, but when you look at the skill and the intangibles that bottom six brings, I mean, it's a shock, because they are, I'm with you, they're one of the best out there, and Winnipeg still can't get it done. They're getting production from the top, from Laine and Scheifele, but they are not getting the W's.
No. Dallas is my sleeper, but my bottom six, if I had to pick a bottom six, would be St. Louis.
Oh, yeah, solid.
Solid bottom six. You got Maroon, you got Bozak and Robert Thomas. You got Sanford, Ivan Barbashev, and Alex Steen. You got guys that are thick bodies, yep. And they can match you physically if that's the game you want to play, but they can sure as hell put the puck in the net as well.
Absolutely.
And Alex Steen on the fourth line, for crying out loud, he can still put up 20 goals a season if that's what's asked of him. So, I mean, that's a bottom six. I'm surprised they were in last place at all this year. Oh. But they're playing at a rate since January that, you know, if they're not at least one of your picks to at least go to the conference final, let alone the Stanley Cup final, especially with the way they've been playing since January, then I don't know what's going through your head. They're you know, whether they do or don't, they're playing like they're world beaters. I mean,
do we have access to possession numbers on bottom six? I mean, I would love to see that, because I watched Pittsburgh and the Islanders a bit, and when Matt Martin's line, Casey Cizikas, were on the ice, they had the puck constantly. They had the puck all the time. I don't know what the analytics are on it, but when your third and fourth lines have got the other team pinned up below their hash marks for 40 seconds.
Well, that's where your cycle game is.
Gosh, that's awesome.
You find a lot nowadays that your top six are your more up and down lines, right? They're your north-south, you know, Nathan McKinnon's, you know, make them fumble a little bit. Your bottom six is gonna cycle. It's gonna be puck possession. It's gonna be grinding. It's gonna be, you know, I mean, look at, I mean, it wasn't the bottom six, you know, so my mistake. But look at last night and Winnipeg's tying goal at 1-1 last night. Scheifele and Wheeler grinding down low.
Right.
Throwing the puck out front and Wheeler tying it up. I mean, that's not the bottom six, but the point is still valid. You're going to have guys that grind. Guy who has the personality to be a third or fourth liner, personality and the grit to be a third or fourth liner, but produces like a top six player, Matthew Tkachuk.
Oh yeah.
That's a guy who, I mean, depending on what team he's on, even, you know, would fit perfectly in a third or fourth line role, go out and you know, Dan Hynote, get under your skin type of player. I guarantee what drives teams absolutely bonkers about him is that he not only does that, but he puts up 20 or 30 goals a year. So
if you could fast forward through his career, when the game has passed his legs by and he's no longer that effective offensively and not able to skate with everybody else, he will still have a job forever because of that.
I'm taking residency in more defensemen's heads.
Yeah, and goaltenders.
I'm speaking to you, Drew Doughty. Let me know how the golf course is, bud. If you play golf anything like you play defense, you should be on tour. Minus 34. That's awful.
Nice.
I want to complain about someone who gets beat three times a game, maybe even more. Unreal. Go home.
You want to blow smoke? Go have a dart.
Yeah. Unreal. Nobody even asked him.
I love that Islander bottom six though, guys. We're talking about the guys that you get miles out of.
Uncle Leo,
Casey Cizikas has been a killer. And the other thing about the guys that don't get many minutes, they don't get a chance to play with all the best players. They don't put up a lot of big numbers, but they do have to do all the intangible things. They have to shut down. They have to check. They have to win faceoffs. They have to grind. They have to eat minutes. And they have to do it for the absolute league minimum. Because when you're paying your guys, when you're paying Matthews and those guys 10, 12 million bucks.
Someone's got to make 900,000.
Everybody, you've got to have a handful of guys making 950.
Well, I mean, I can't find possession numbers, but Matt Martin, for example, is playing 11 minutes a game. Time on ice. I can't find the possession numbers, but time on ice, he's at 11:26.
The Penguins probably feel like he's playing 35 minutes a night, the way that line looks right now. But and if that continues, you know, you're going to look like Thornton and Kelly and Campbell and the guys in Boston a few years ago, Bolin and Bickle in Chicago, on down the list. It's an absolute must to get real meaningful play out of those guys and driving the other team insane.
Yeah. So bottom six is I think key to a championship winning team these days. The same way a fourth line, the way a fourth line was a fourth line 15 years ago is key. Bottom six being possession time, grinding, cycle, all this stuff is today what a Lucic line with big open ice hits and physicality and everything, whether you like the guy or not.
Oh, yeah.
But was 8, 9, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, you saw the fourth line being big bodies. They were the bruisers, right? They were the Lucic's, the Ryan Reeves, the...
Ask Randy Carlyle with his Tim Jackmans and Jared Bowles. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, but that was the line. So you wanted grit. They were going to give you grit, but they were going to give you fights. They were going to give you big open ice hits. Yep. Now the thing you need is the bottom six, which will give you possession time, cycle the puck, grind away, take pressure, especially if they can produce, take pressure off the top six to give to give more freedom to a Johnny Gaudreau or a Nathan MacKinnon or a Tyler Seguin or a Steven Stamkos or a Kucherov or anybody like that. Those are key for a winning team in today's NHL.
They are the backup goaltender. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, look at the panic. If something goes bad, and look around at the teams that are using two real effective goaltenders now, not just Fleury and Murray in Pittsburgh who won a cup together, but Boston using Rask and Halak, like everybody.
Lehner and Greiss,
and that's why there's panic. And to a certain extent, Calgary with Smitty and Riddick.
Yeah, they're just a little bit subpar.
Yeah, but you know,
both perfectly capable, but they're just they're not.
Pull it up at the right time.
Yeah.
But that's why there's panic in Toronto if anything goes wrong with Freddie.
Yeah, Sparks. He's not looked strong this year.
Not at all.
I know they're missing Curtis McIlhenny a little bit here, but I think Sparks will get his feet under him. He'll get going.
Well, McIlhenny's always in demand. He wasn't on the market long.
No.
Well, War Room, the hockey podcast, episode 7 today, NHL playoff hockey. Real quick, these NHL commercials that they have going. Have you seen these? They're pretty funny, with Marner and Nylander trying to put money in their music player. You know that's pretty good. And Matthews filming that commercial on his cell phone with Marner at the rink. I mean.
These guys are creative.
Props for being creative.
Yeah.
I mean, so quick shout out to that. At least it can be entertaining in between periods a little
keeps
bit.
Keeps the fun in it.
Keeps,
for sure.
Keeps the fun.
Smiling.
War Room, the hockey podcast. We're going to take one last quick break before we come back for the conclusion of episode 7 this week. So stay tuned.
Appreciate if we don't get back, we'll be at Breakaway Brewing, by the way.
Yes. So War Room, the hockey podcast. We'll be right back. War Room, the hockey podcast, can be found on Instagram, found on Facebook. Instagram is at War Room, the hockey podcast. Facebook, simply type in War Room, the hockey podcast. Like, comment, subscribe. We appreciate the support. YouTube is coming up in a few weeks. Speaking of YouTube, quick note, we are keeping 2 minutes for instigating the segment we were going to have on YouTube. We were going to keep it on the podcast, at least for now. So that is coming up here in just a moment, but, social media, we appreciate the support. Comment, send us a message, ask questions. We appreciate you being interactive and supporting us along the way. War Room, the hockey podcast, coming right back. So 2 minutes for instigating. This week, Owen Rauer's getting called. 2 minutes for instigating.
Listen, I just want to address this whole Nashville crowd situation and their chants, specifically the "It's all your fault" one. You know, more power to you for doing something that nobody else in the league does and having passion for the game like that. But your credibility flies out the window when you're down 4-0 in the third period and you score your first goal and you're still taunting the guy. Learn your place. Figure it out. Especially when you've got a track record of one of the worst playoff goaltenders in the league in your dustpan, Pecorine. So when he swims his way over the bench for the third time this postseason and you guys get eliminated, just keep that chant in mind. Remember whose fault it actually is.
You don't care for Pekka Pickle Peppers?
No, that tiny Pekka, not a fan.
That was a good call. That penalty was well, richly deserved there. I didn't. Some of them can go either way. Not that one. By the way, it's not going to take 2 minutes, but it is hot in here. Louis, how is it 8 degrees outside and it's like 40 in here? Could you please turn the heat down?
I don't think he heard you. I think he's tired of your criticism, so
he's asleep.
So he went to the other room to take a nap.
God,
have his bean burrito and take a nap.
Yeah, he's probably got that hot so he can lose some weight.
Well, tremendous week this week. So thank you boys for joining me.
Lots
appreciate
of fun.
You being in the studio.
Always a pleasure.
Great conversation. Good to finally talk NHL playoff hockey.
Yep.
So.
We'll see you next time.
I know we're two games behind, but but it's good conversation. So, anyways, going to close it out. Thank you so much for listening. All the supporters that listen every week. And you know, just again, we appreciate the support. I can't thank you enough. Without the listeners and the fans, it doesn't really go much of anywhere, whether you criticize, whether you agree or disagree, we appreciate it. So thank you.
Put the word on the street.
Put the word, share, like, subscribe, everything. War Room the Hockey Podcast, episode 7 this week. Come back next week, episode 8. We hope to have another tremendous episode for you. And stay classy. War Room the Hockey Podcast, found on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube in the coming weeks. Episode 8 next week. Thank you, boys, again for joining me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Anytime.
All right.
Cheers.
Thanks, boys.